Welcome to Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis, your host. As a writer, speaker, and former legislator, we discuss limiting government, fiscal responsibility, and fair taxation. I'm a mother of seven and a wife of one for over three decades, so I bring you my personal experience. And now it's time for Homefront with Cynthia Davis. Another night for us all to return again. Thank you so much for joining us for an edition of Homefront. So tonight we have a special show lined up for you. You can learn from the experts. We bring you an experienced panel of people who've studied elections for years, and they can help us all process what happened in many states during the primary process. So is it true that nice guys finish last? Tonight we're going to offer some analysis of what happened in the last election and discuss how open primaries affect the outcome in states that have them. So tonight we have some really interesting people, starting with Mary Ruth Edwards. And Mary Ruth, you come to us from Washington. Tell us a little bit about how that process works and why are you running again and how did it work last time?
Okay, well, I want to make clear I'm from Washington State, not the other Washington. And in Washington State, we have what's called a top two primary. The parties do not determine who's on the ballot. So anybody and their uncle can decide, hey, I want to run for office, and they can file and get their name on the ballot. The only thing that they ask you to do is that you have to designate which party you prefer. And it doesn't mean that because I prefer the Republican Party that I've been endorsed by the Republican Party, that I even have ever read the platform or anything like that. So when you see the R behind a person's name on a Washington State ballot, there's no guarantee that they are truly a Republican or a CP or, you know, Constitution Party or any of those things.
Well, so if it's meaningless, Mary Ruth, if it's meaningless what party you're with, because there's no scrutiny, there's no vetting, there's no litmus test, they don't do a blood examination, none of that. If that's what it means, then why do they even bother to ask what party you prefer?
I think just because we're so steeped in party politics, that's part of it. And, you know, if you look at the Democrat and the Republican Party, and they don't want to give that up. They figure if you've got an R behind your name, that's one more Republican. They don't care what your voting record is. They just like that you have an R behind your name.
Okay, so what's happened now is in August 5th, 1 week ago, you had an election, and people can vote for any candidate they want of any party, They end up, whoever's the top two people go on to the November contest. How does that serve you well?
Well, I don't know that it does. If it were up to me, I'd say let's not even have a primary. If you want all those choices, let people decide in December or in November. And if there's a tie, then you have a runoff. Because it costs us a ton of money to run a primary election, and then you just narrowed it down to a runoff in November, essentially. Now, let me give you a couple examples. In the 4th Congressional District, our representative, Doc Hastings, is retiring. He's not running again. So we had 12 people on the ballot to get into the top two. We had two Democrats, two Independents, and eight Republicans. And so it turns out that we've got two Republicans in the primary, in the general election. And right now there's about 7,000 votes difference between the two. So, you know, who knows who knows how it's going to turn out. We don't know if the moderate Republican is probably going to get the Democrat votes and the independent votes, and the conservative Republican is probably going to get Republican votes. So who knows?
Interesting. Now, we have Janine Husky with us tonight. Janine is the founder of the Eureka Tea Party. Eureka! Sorry, I always wanted to say that. Janine also is the founder of an organization pushing for closed primaries in Missouri. We have open primaries right now, which means, again, just like Washington, nobody really notices or cares what party you're with, although you have to humiliate yourself. If you're a Democrat and you want to take, you have to take a Republican ballot if you want to vote for Republicans. So, and likewise, if you're a Republican, you have to tell the election judge, I would like to take a Democrat ballot. And it's, I have to say, very embarrassing for people to monkey with the system. There's a little bit of a natural containment because it would be like, well, I guess the closest equivalent to give you an emotional understanding is it's like going to the doctor and then having to tell the doctor what your problem is. Even though only the doctor knows, you don't want to blab it to the world. And when you go to take a ballot for one party or another, they do demand that you explain which ballot would you like. Now, Janine, give us some of your thoughts on the open primary system, and why are you investing your time and energy to push for a closed primary?
Well, I look at it as open primaries are opening the door to political mischief by opposing party members, and that goes with both parties, not just Democrats, Republicans as well, because we just had the county executive, Charlie Dooley, here in St. Louis County. I received from a few sources that said there were a lot of Republicans that took a Democrat ballot just to make sure that Charlie Dooley wasn't reelected. And this, to me, is just, it's being deceitful for one. You know, it's not being honest with your own party, that, you know, that you're supposed to be with that one party and with that platform, and you're going to the other side to vote, whether it's for or against that other party's candidate. And I just think, and they can vote for their candidates in their party.
Now, Mary Ruth, do you like the way you do it in Washington State? I understand that instead of having an election day, everybody gets mailed a ballot, and then you get to pick, do I want to just turn it in, put it in a ballot box or a voting machine somewhere? How does that work for you?
Okay, about 18 days prior to the election, they mail out, the counties mail out the ballots. And then you have until 8 o'clock the day of voting day, until 8 p.m., to postmark it or put it in a ballot box. So there's no more going to the polling station and pulling the curtain and making your choices.
Well, how do you protect your... Yeah, how do you protect yourself from voter fraud? Because what if you have an elderly or infirmed parent or child who gets a ballot and then you decide you would like to vote twice, so you just take his or her ballot and vote for that individual? How does that protect you?
It doesn't. It doesn't. And unfortunately, we're seeing the results of that. When Dino Rossi and Christine Gregoire were running for governor, there was like 600 addresses or 600 ballots coming from a single address. And you just kind of go, wow, that's kind of amazing. But, we're seeing that, we've seen, it's been videotaped where People who go to the post office box to pick up their ballot, if they just decide to dump their ballot, they put it in the recycle bin, and we've seen people digging through those recycle bins and taking those ballots out. So it's not a very secure way of voting.
Well, let me ask you this. Since it doesn't really mean that much when a candidate says what party he or she is preferred to be on, can you tell me how that benefits you to run as a Republican instead of running on the Constitution Party?
Well, unfortunately, it doesn't really matter, except that we've got people who are still, all they do is they look for the R on the ballot, or they look for the, you know, whatever party that they are on. Now, on my side of the state, in my district, the Constitution Party has not made very much headway, and people are just—they're either Democrat or they're Republican, and that's how they vote. So the problem, there is no way. I mean, like I said, that you can't for sure know that the person who says that I prefer the Republican Party is truly a Republican or even truly a Constitution Party member. The woman who ran in my district before I did against my opponent, she ran on the Constitution Party ticket, and she was not a member of the Constitution Party. So, you know, it kind of, the parties, let me take it back. In Walla Walla, which is my largest demographic, Walla Walla County, their GOP had a candidate qualifying meeting. So everybody who said they were Republican showed up at the meeting and had to give their two-minute speech on why they were such a good Republican, and then they were all asked three questions by the Republican Party, and then there was a vote by the precinct committee officers as to whether they felt you were a real Republican or not. So everybody who showed up got to be a real Republican. But the only reason that they did that, and they explained that, because we all thought, well, this is just kind of a silly thing. But the way they explained it was, well, we don't have the party primaries anymore. And so this is one way that we, as a county party, can say that we can recommend these people now, that we believe they truly are Republicans and not just saying that so they can get elected.
So how does your opponent qualify as a Republican when she clearly is against the platform position on marriage being between a man and a woman?
Well, she calls herself a moderate Republican, and the people in Walla Walla County, in the county party, are also moderate. They think that's okay. And so, you know, they don't believe, and she's the incumbent, so, you know, they have this reverence for incumbents, whether or not your voting record shows that you abide by the platform or not.
Okay, well, I'm an outsider, so far be it from me to tell you how to run your state, but if you'll allow me for a moment, don't you think somebody in Washington State should say to that woman, your philosophy and your legislative agenda does not match up with the platform of the Republican Party, and therefore maybe you should just run as a Democrat? What's wrong with that?
Well, I said that to her last time I ran against her. But, you know, I think it's crazy. I think if you say that you are Republican, you need to abide by the platform. But then you get quoted the Reagan rule of 80-20. Well, so long as you agree 80% of the time. But I beg to differ with that, because to me that 20% is crucial. If you believe that it's a woman's choice to terminate the life of her child, or you believe that, you know, marriage is not just between a man and a woman, then I can't go along with that. Those are deal breakers for me.
And they should have been deal breakers for the Republicans as well.
Yes.
Because,
yes,
I mean, what is the point of even having a platform? So tell us about your previous elections, and what kind of people have you run against, and on what parties?
Okay, so I was back in, like, I don't know, I can't remember how long ago it was, but I was appointed a PCO in the Republican Party. And then I got really disillusioned with it. I got so frustrated. I threw up my hands and I quit. And then I found the Constitution Party, and I fell in love with the platform and the people, and that's when I got to meet you. And, you know, it was really great. And I got all inspired, and so I decided, okay, I'm going to run for Congress. And because we were looking for people to jump in and do that. So I ran for Congress. It was a six-way primary, and I didn't come in dead last. I got 3% of the vote. But everybody I talked to, I mean, I got standing ovations everywhere I went. But those were from the informed voters, and those voters who just look for, you know, the letter behind your name, who don't do any investigation, you know, they don't educate themselves. You know, I mean, I think that's where that came in. Plus, you know, it was an incumbent, and, you know, heaven forbid that you run against an incumbent. So that one, and but it was quite, you know, let's just jump right in the deep end for when running for office. It was quite an experience. And then I was asked to run for mayor the very next year. It was not really something I wanted to do, but I just had people come back and ask me several times. So I ran for mayor, and I didn't win. He was a very popular mayor, but he's a very liberal mayor, and I live in a very liberal city. But then we got in Washington State, it was after the census, they decided to redistrict us. So I was redistricted into into my current district. And as soon as I found out who my opponent was, or who my representative was and what she stood for, I decided, no, I can't take that. So I decided to run against her. And initially I did decide to run as a Constitution Party candidate. But I was at the presidential nominating convention in Nashville. Remember that?
I do. It was a thrill to meet you, Mary Ruth. Thank you.
Well, it was really great. So I was there, and I was talking to everybody, and I had been challenged. I had people challenging me that maybe this wasn't such a good idea to run as a Constitution Party candidate because of the prior election. The woman who had run as a CP candidate really did not do well at all. And so I was consulting with my Constitution Party friends, and we decided that it was more important to run on the principles, even regardless of what the party label was. They knew me to be constitutionally minded and to be conservative and to, you know, really believe in conservative constitutional principles. And so they encouraged me instead to run as a Republican. We just felt it was better to try and get into office and to be that kind of legislator and worrying about labels. So I did. I changed to be running as a Republican. And so that was my decision. And it was a hard decision because I really like the Constitution Party. But in this part of the state, they have not accepted the Constitution Party as a legitimate party.
And so what percentage of the vote did you get as a Republican?
So last time in the primary, I got 37% of the vote. In the general election, I got 42% of the vote. So in the primary this time, I ended up with almost 41% in the primary. There's about 3,500 votes between us. And so we still feel it's a doable. I mean, we're going to have to work hard, but we still think it's a doable accomplishment for November.
How many residents are there in a state rep seat?
There are roughly 138,000 per district.
And you were the difference between you was 2,000 votes or so?
It was about 3,500 in the primary. But we only had a 37.5% turnout. And a pretty lousy turnout.
You know what, 37.5% is quite a bit higher. In Missouri, we just had about 25% in our primary.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because of all the extra voter fraud you've got out there, perhaps.
Yeah, I don't know. So,
well, that's amazing. You know, let me ask you this. If you lose, does it matter what party you lose on? I mean, a loss is a loss. Have you considered that possibly the people just don't like conservative values and that's why good conservatives are losing?
No. I believe that we have overwhelmingly conservative voters in our district because we had the same-sex marriage bill on the ballot last time, and it was defeated resoundingly by our district. So I know that we have conservatives in our district. And every time I turn around, people are like, oh, you know, we're conservative Republicans, and we're just sick and tired of this person who votes like a Democrat. And so I know they're out there. The problem is that we still have enough. There are not enough people going out and doing their due diligence. They have not, part of what I'm doing is I've been taking courses through the Tennessee Center for Self-Governance, and you know, you have to inform the discretion of Mrs. Powell. You have to go out and you have to inform people because they don't know and they're not going to seek it out themselves. So our next big doorbelling thing, we're going to go out and we're going to be talking to people and finding out how they feel on things like the Second Amendment and traditional marriage and, the right to life and those types of things. And if they are showing that they are conservative, then we'll say, well, did you know that the incumbent, you know, is pro-choice? Did you know that she sponsored a gun control bill? Did you know that she raises taxes every time she gets a chance? And when people find out how she votes, they go, oh, well, I'm not going to vote for her. So,
well, that's what they say. So I know you've got to go.
Yeah.
I know that you have to run in a few minutes, and that's why we let you speak first. And I'm just incredibly honored that you could be with us tonight. But can you explain one last thing before we let you go? Are you happy with the way your state does the primaries?
No, I'm not. No, I think they either need to, my big thing has always been, I don't see a need for a primary if it's just going to, if we're going to just have this big open thing where we can have 12 candidates in August and we narrow it down to two. Well, that's a runoff. How about you just do it? If you're going to do it that way, just have one election in November. Give people all the choice they want, and then they can, whoever comes out ahead in November is the winner. Because we're spending truckloads of money every single time we do an election. And so why are we wasting paper? There were only two people in my race this time. It was me and the incumbent. And we were on the primary ballot. Why? It's automatic that we're going through to November. It's automatic. Mm-hmm. And yet they're wasting paper to put us on the ballot. So, you know, and I'd like to go back to polling places. I think that's the most secure thing, and require voter ID.
Not only that, but it's fun. What kind of party pooper came up with that idea that let's not all congregate at the polls on election day?
I know, exactly. Yeah.
Mary Ruth, we're going to let you go, but thank you for joining us for a few minutes tonight. We're delighted, and we'll be watching your race to see what happens next. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it, Cynthia.
Great. Okay, now, Janine, I'd like you to react to some of this. Mary Ruth did have to leave, but what I'm interested in is hearing what got you. You heard her say from the horse's mouth that doesn't, you know, whoever gets the top. Let me tell you a little bit about what I did on Election Day last Tuesday. I got up at 4 in the morning and worked inside the polls. From 5, I had to go get things set up, and by the time the ballots were delivered, it was 8:30 at night. And I spent the bulk of the time asking voters as they came in, do you want to take a ballot for a party? Or and you would just, I mean, as many times as I repeated that mantra all day, you would be shocked at how many people got offended that I would dare to ask. It was like I asked them about their love life or tell me about your private details.
That's personal, right?
Yeah, it's like none of your business who I slept with last night. You know, I mean, come on. this is unbelievable that you're supposed to be smart enough that we're going to trust you with a ballot and a pen, but you don't understand that you have to pick which ballot. Janine, I would love it if the political parties were required to pay for the primary, not the taxpayers. What do you think that would do to the primary process?
Oh, if the parties had to fund the money to pay for the primaries, I don't think there would be a primary. I really don't. In fact, I like what Mary Ruth said was, let's just abolish the primary and go directly to the general. Because if they're wanting to have just completely open primaries where, you know, you could pick anybody, then you might as well put everybody on one ballot and then vote for them during the general election and then have a runoff. Because basically what we've got now is two general elections. There's not a primary. It's more like, you know, pick whoever you want, whatever, you know, it doesn't matter what party you're at. It's all open. Pick your party open primary. And then whoever wins that goes on to the general. Well, then that the general, like she was saying, is just the runoff vote.
I agree. And I was up. Yeah, I mean, this is how uneducated the voters are. And this is why we're also seeing negative outcomes, because people don't get it. I cannot tell you how many people walked into my polling place and said, I would like to vote for some candidates on both tickets because I let them see the sample ballots ahead of time. Now, I was up for the challenge. I want you to know that everybody who came into my precinct got an education with their ballot. But it saddens me that we have to educate them. Why am I wearing myself out? I'm running out of saliva in my mouth trying to explain to them, guys, you have to pick which, you know, join up with which. And because we don't demand that people register. Now, there are some states where people do have to register ahead of time. The sad part is that I don't know that actually how to gauge if that serves us well. We're still seeing people with Democrat ideology running on Republican tickets if they feel that district serves them well. Like what Mary Ruth just explained, the woman she's running against is against the heart and soul of the platform. You're seeing more and more of that. You're seeing, you know, the Republican Party used to stand for family and morality. Now they've shunned those people and said, if you're about family and morality, just shove a sock in your mouth, because that's not serving us well. We're going to narrow the tent if we do that. So, Ike, I'd like you to weigh in for a minute. Ike Skelton is the chairman of the Lebanon Tea Party, and he's the founder of an organization called Missourians Against Agenda 21. You have a lot to contribute because you ran against Dianne Franklin, correct? I want you to tell us a little bit about how a great man of honor like you, who stands for decency, morality, and limited government, a novel concept like that, how is it possible that you didn't emerge successful as the state rep for that district?
Well, you give me way too many accolades, but I tell you what, it does have to do with the primary system. It's an interesting topic, and it has to do, I think, with people have to realize within themselves who they are, you know. I've got no real problem with having a party, but what happened in my case is that a lot of Democrats in my county knew who I was and what I was about and did not want me in office. And they knew that my opponent was a moderate Democrat, conservative on some things, but moderate on others. It doesn't make me believe in as little a government. So the government, you know, that your Democrats are going to like that. And they actually had a meet and greet. One of the Democrats that was a big party guy down here, brought in Claire McCaskill and some other folks, actually hosted a meet and greet for my opponent in a restaurant here in Lebanon. And I found that rather rather interesting. If I was a Republican, I probably wouldn't have gone. I don't know. I don't think I would have, because they wouldn't have wanted to listen to me anyway, because I'm not going to vote the way they want to vote. But I like the closed primary system. I think I'm a little bit different between you and Mary Beth there, that primary system is kind of a good thing. I tend to agree with Janine. I think it's all right that we have something like that.
Well, you have been a person who lived in Lebanon for your whole life, pretty much, and you knew all the people.
No, that's actually not accurate. I lived in Lebanon for about 3 years at this time, actually, and I was just kind of emerging on the stage. But my mouth was a little bit bigger than it probably should be sometimes, and I got out there, and people found out who I was pretty quick. So I actually had the other county north of me in Camden County that I had to – I spent 90% of my time probably – well, maybe 80% of my time up there trying to figure out what to do up there. So, but it was a different thing, and what bothered me was that in this instance, a Republican would go over to that side and say, well, okay, here I am and who I am, and please vote for me, like they did in Mississippi. I think that's a little appalling.
Tell me a little bit from the Tea Party's perspective, since, Ike, you're at the head of the Lebanon Tea Party. And for those who are listening nationwide, I want to encourage you to feel safe. Lebanon is not in the Middle East. It's in Missouri. And I've been coached. I've been schooled that I don't pronounce it correctly. It's supposed to be Lebanon. But I'm more phonetic than that. And I'd like both you and Janine Husky, who's the head of the Eureka Tea Party, to tell me what is the influence that the Tea Party movement still enjoys, or is it diminishing? How come we couldn't convert that into votes for our good candidates? What is going on there?
Well, you know, I think personally we've won some and we've lost some. I think that the movement needs to know that there are some wins out there. And to be quite candid with you on this ballot, I don't want to go over it, but unless you really want to, but the First Amendment 1 really put a rift between the Liberty movement, the Tea Party movement, what have you. So I think that was a bit of a problem. But, you know, I think that we are becoming very much more engaged. I think we are becoming influenced. Look what happened in the last elections, and I know that we've got other people on committee folks, and their Republican Party committee folks are now being held. A lot of the seats are being held by the Tea Party movement, and thank you, Mop and Judy Sofka over there, and those guys, they do a fantastic job with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think the Tea Party groups, you know, they're still out there organized. Some are and some aren't. But I think a lot of that has to do with the leaders have either become candidates themselves or become councilmen or, you know, become candidates in an office or on the GOP committees.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're all busy in our own little spheres doing what we can. We're not as united as what I'd like to, what I had envisioned.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, back in 2012, there was a lot of infighting going on, and that with the presidential election going on, there was about half of us for Ron Paul and half for another candidate. So, yeah, and then even with this constitutional amendment with the right to farm, we all have our different goals on how we want to reach, you know, to take back our state and our country. So we all don't agree on the procedure, what, you know, how we want to reach our goals. So we're all different people, and I think we're coming to terms with that. We're just doing what we can in our area, our little world, and what we can do. So we're still here.
Well, Tony, I want you to weigh in. We have with us Tony Lasak. Tony was a candidate for the U.S. Senate in 2010, and that was when there was an open seat. Shortly after the election, he became the director of the Cornerstone Conservative Coalition, which is a Missouri political action committee designed to assist conservative organizations across the state to organize and network among each other, as well as providing consulting and training to grassroots conservative campaigns. So let me ask you this, Tony. What are we doing and how can we do it better? And how do we actually make it translate into electoral victories?
Sure. Well, you know, listening to Ike and Janine there with the Tea Party movement there, I had done a lot of Tea Party work too, and a lot of mostly invites and, you know, gave some advice to different groups and whatnot, helped them organize. But what you have to take a look at when you're looking at these types of movements and about changing what some people might call activism to actionism. So, you know, to segue and agree with what they were saying about the Tea Party, these leaders, the top four or five people that are actually taking action in those groups, move on and continue to take action. So the groups dwindle down until they continue to make events and things. So we have to do a better job of putting people in our place. So as you move through your actionism and you go on to taking action, you have to bring people along with you, whether it be the younger people or whether it be the older people that have always wanted to be involved and hadn't had an opportunity. Mm-hmm. And when you leave them in place, they should have tools to do a better job day one than you did. So it's all about developing leadership at those levels in the community. And then the bottom line comes down to all of these people are volunteers. So you have to nurture the fact that they're only willing to do what they're willing to do. So most of these people in Tea Party want to have a little bit of ownership of something. So you just got to discover what it is they want to own and then put them in place in the right areas when you move on to take action. So, you know, to bring that all back to talking about primaries, that's the time when you need to put a plan into action. 120 days before that is when you should have been involved in choosing a candidate to get behind. And a lot of people will not get behind candidates in the primaries. Well, because there's no vetting in this state, particular in other states, you have to do the vetting. And there's plenty of different organizations out there that do that. So if you can organize your own vetting process and find a way to be able to market that statewide, I think you could really be effective.
Yeah, well, I think marketing is so important. We, you know, to get the word out there to everybody, especially statewide, that's, I found, one of the most difficult parts is our resources and time is limited and how we can reach out to get our message out there.
Tony and I, we haven't talked for a while, but you're absolutely correct in what you're talking about, the action, moved action into activism to actionism, and you're absolutely right. And in the primaries is when we should be picking our folks. That's where we should be working the hardest. And I have a confession to make, and maybe some of the rest of you can sink in, maybe some of your listeners can think about it and just take my confession and run with it and say, yeah, me too, to yourself. But you know what? I donated to a few candidates this particular session, a primary. I talked to a couple of them and asked them how I could help. But you know what? I honestly did not go out and knock on a single door for anyone, and I didn't help them in any other way. And I feel a little ashamed about that when I think about things. And this is what Tony was talking about here. That's the time when we should be the most active to make sure our folk get in there. Mm-hmm. And we all have to do that. And I'm guilty this time of not having done it, to be honest.
You know, call yourself guilty, but I think what's happening here is people have tried. They've given their blood, sweat, and tears, and it felt like it still doesn't make a difference. And it seems like we are all the nicest people you could ever meet, but we are not making a difference because the other people aren't playing nice. And it's very frustrating when you work hard for a good candidate only to see the campaign crumble because of the mean-spirited attacks. Now, I have to say something that nobody wants to hear. But negative advertising works. It works almost every time. So the political consultants out there have figured out if you want to go dirty, you actually can win. And if you want to dump boatloads of money into the campaign, you probably can win with that as well. And now that they've figured out all it takes is money and lies to win, we're getting shellacked. So how do we overcome that?
Well, who was it just not too long ago in a couple of primaries in a different state? They outspent him big time, and he won. I honestly don't remember the name of the candidate, but he was a Tea Party-backed candidate. I think they spent two or three times or 20 times more money than did, and they didn't win. That side didn't win. So, you know, I believe that if we can get a stronger structure together, I think that grassroots on the ground knocking on doors means more than money in a lot of respects. And money's important too, but we need boots on the ground to work.
Perhaps.
Boots on the ground, Cynthia. Sorry, Cynthia.
No, I need to hear your I sound like a damaged candidate, don't I?
I'm sorry.
I don't want to sound bitter. I love all of you, and I love your optimism, and we need to pull together. We need to fight together. We need to find the right techniques that are going to get us over the finish line. I don't blame anybody for being discouraged and saying that didn't work for me. Perhaps on the, you know, Tony, you ran for U.S. Senate, and what happened with Roy Blunt wasn't even close. I mean, he did a pummeling of everybody else. And maybe the problem is it was a statewide campaign and there were just too many voters to inform. But why can't we come up with a pipeline, a conduit, a network, a vascular system, something to deliver the message to the people who want good, honest government?
And that's exactly what the Cornerstone Conservative is working on, and it does take multiples of years. So you look at the corruption in the GOP and you look at the corruption in the Democrats, that's always been there. However, they've built their network. I mean, the Democrats have this thing called Act Blue, and they send out mailers every single day all year round, four or five times a day, and all these Democrats sign up for it. They're well informed, and they also teach them how to do things. We don't do that as a GOP or in some of these other third-party individuals. But, you know, talking about a race against Roy Blunt, you know, the difficulty there is because we don't have a network like that isn't based on money, that's based on the people, then they have the opportunity to be scared of somebody they believe in. And I tell you, thousands of people, thousands, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people told me almost exactly, hey, we believe in everything and actually think you'll do a better job, but we just can't get behind you because we don't think you're going to beat the Secretary of State, Carnahan. They have $8 million each, and they're battering back and forth, and until today, I never even heard of you. And, you know, when you do things of that nature and somebody jumps up and down and says, you're exactly what I've always been waiting for, at the end of a forum, you ask them, hey, let me ask you two important questions. What am I running for and what is my name? And they told you 20 times they were going to vote for you, but they can't answer that 10 minutes after the meeting. So to interact, you know, you got all the different Tea Party groups. You have all these other conservative groups. You have GOP groups that work with some of these groups or interact, you get your Patriot groups. They all are independent, and they all have the same goals. It's how they're getting to their goals that are greatly different. If we could link those groups together, then we'd be successful, and we won't have to rely on the money. But you have to, at this time and age, if you want to work, you have to find things that are already in place, and you have to help them link together, and we have to let go of the ownership of the different groups. Shoot, the Tea Party groups that I go to, they don't want to work with other Tea Party groups because we're this much different or we're 80-20 something else. And the whole thing is you got to get behind one candidate together as a group.
Well, let me throw out a question for you, Tony. You're the man who made me think a few years ago when you said our courage comes from our righteousness. I want to postulate the question, do you think the reason we're not bringing people together is because we can't agree on the importance of the social issues?
I do, and I think we define our morality greatly different from town to town. And that's why in lies, when I go to these different groups, I tell them, what is Can you define the morality of your community, of your county and the counties that surround you? And how did it come to be that way? And of course, there's several hundred different churches or religious groups or, you know, nonprofit organizations that work off morality issues. So you really have to get into how they come together. And if you don't have different people in those sections of your state, I mean, Missouri, if you put a plus sign down the middle of Missouri, every single corner is completely different economically, almost religiously, you know, if you want to take out specifically the, you know, Christianity or whatnot, but the way they practice, the way they think, how they came to be in history, not the last 10, 15, 20 years, 100 years. That's what's making these communities, and we're not really thinking that far back. But when you do your analysis of where you're going in and how you formulate what you're saying, you have to understand those things. How did the business come to be? What was the morality in the choices of the business on Main Street? You go down to town, I could tell you a lot about what's going on in that town, but what businesses are on their main streets and what the economy is behind the main streets. So we don't really take a look at those things sufficiently enough. We just get out and say, oh, I think I can do a better job because my morality is right. It comes down to prayer every minute of the day and building a personal relationship with God and surrounding yourself with people that can do that. That's the only way we're going to be successful in a conservative movement. You know, socialism is something they throw around all the time. But when I'm in the colleges, I do a lot of speaking in the colleges. The kids were raised to be socialists. They believe that, you know, they deserve things because they're American. And to go and earn it is something that just blows their mind. You know, they can't handle it. And it all comes down to how they define it from where they're coming from. Well, Missouri itself, you go county to county, St. Louis and St. Louis City combined outvote 42 counties. You throw in Kansas City, and now we're up to like 83 or 84, depending on the voting election. So, you know, over half the state's vote is 50-50 at that point. We're winning elections by a couple thousand votes. In counties, we're winning elections by hundreds of votes or 10 votes, 15 votes. So, I mean, to understand how people came to be, and you have to emulate, that's the key. In your groups, when you get together, your leadership has to emulate those Christian values. You don't even have to call them Christian values. If you emulate them, people will see them. They'll model themselves after you. Then you bring on the fact, hey, you want to know where I get these morals from or, you know, how I came to these conclusions? But we try to do it the other way around as conservatives, and it hurts people's feelings because I've labeled myself as a God-given Christian, and I believe everything, you know, that I'm a Christian. And then you tell me that I'm not allowed to have an abortion? Well, that's not the way to do it. You come around and show them and you emulate the different methods of practicing your morality. You have to practice it in front of them. And then they'll listen to you, and then they'll understand the value of life, and then they'll understand the value of your sovereignty in your home and in your state.
Here's the problem. I want to just summarize it by the name Todd Akin. And when he was on the ballot 2 short years ago, he won the primary. And people believed he was a good candidate at the time. Apparently, the majority of those who voted for him to be the Republican nominee thought at the time he was good. But it was a moral issue, not a fiscal issue, that ended up bringing him down. And when it was finally election day in November, the majority of Missourians said, I want Mitt Romney for president of the United States. So it wasn't that the only Democrats came out to vote. No, there were a majority of the voters said, I want the Republican man to be the president. And then the majority of the voters said, but I don't want Todd Akin to be in the Senate, the Republican guy, because of his feelings about abortion. Can you explain that one to us, any of the three of you?
Yeah. Let me give a couple shots, and I'll be short because I know I'm long-winded. But, you know, I worked on a Todd Akin campaign, and it wasn't I didn't do it initially. I did it down the road when they asked for help. But I think that he won the primaries mostly because he was already established. And I tell you that because I interviewed people when I was at the door. On that campaign, I went corner to corner all over the state delivering, I don't know if you got the little flyer that showed the comparison of all the different candidates. I went to 1,800 miles in one day one time. So, I mean, and I always had a little survey going on, and the majority of them were voting for him because they felt like he was the established candidate. And the other candidates, they didn't understand clearly enough why they were running against the establishment. However, I have personal friends that are diehard Republicans, if you will. I wouldn't call them conservatives, but Republicans that did not vote for Todd Akin. They voted for Claire McCaskill, even though they disagreed with over half of the things that she's voted on in her last election period because of that comment. And it just blows my mind.
Wow.
And they're shallow, and they'd rather go along with the commercialism of things than the morality of things.
What do you say, Janine? Go ahead, Todd.
Well,
or Ike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead, Ike.
Well, I just saw it, and we were talking about that particular election. You know, when you have when you do have a party structure, you can't dump on a guy that quick. Just that particular election, they Roy Blunt and others dumped on that man just as quickly as they possibly could because they didn't want, in my opinion, they didn't want his type of conservatism in Washington, D.C. with them. So, but that's all I got to say about that.
I wholeheartedly agree with that because they're all money people, and Todd Akin's not about money whatsoever.
Well, they wanted his kind of conservatism when he won the primary.
Well, did the establishment have so much to do with that?
Yeah, I don't think so.
I don't want to know about rehashing that election, but anyhow.
No, I think that's where the Democrats had a lot to do with it, and that's where this raiding the party and doing crossover voting from one party to another really affects how elections come out. And I saw that happen, I thought, oh, well, I guess, I'll go with Todd Akin because anybody but Claire McCaskill, right? So, I stood by him, and that's what the party should have done, but they didn't. And this is where I think our Tea Party candidates are not going to win unless we have closed primaries because the Republican establishment, and we saw this in Mississippi, they are essentially using open primaries to fight against Tea Party candidates. We're actually fighting against the Democrats and the Republicans. We're being surrounded by all sides. And I just don't see us winning unless we close the primaries to, vacate the rhinos to clean our own house first until, then we can get some good candidates in there.
Yeah.
Okay.
I
love your perspective. What do we need to do to close them, because I exhausted myself for 8 years on the elections committee in Jefferson City. And first of all, not one representative even brought forth the idea. And secondly, we can't even so much as get an election fraud bill passed. I mean, the photo ID was a huge fight. Then they said, oh, we have to mix it with early voting. And I said to the chairman, I marched in his office, and I said, have you gone nuts? Why are you mixing early voting, which is a Democrat idea pushed by Robin Carnahan? Why do you feel you need to do that with photo ID? And he said, well, I figured I'd give something to the Democrats. And I said, buddy, we're in charge here. We own the place. We're the Republican Party, folks. We can decide what legislation goes forth and what doesn't. And if the Democrats don't like it, guess what? There aren't enough of them to vote against it. So what gives?
Our laws don't want the people to take action on it because all the legislators make money off the primaries. And, when you're making money twice, argumentatively three times, why would I step out and say, hey, I want my turn my money machine off? $6 million we spent on this election. $6 million.
Those candidates don't put it in their pocket, though. So I know they can use it for some influence when they get their treasuries built up and they can give it to other candidates and things like that. But but it's not like they just put it all in their pocket. I think the party establishment doesn't want closed primaries because I think they like that influence. I think we're going to have to, as grassroots, and there's a few other people that want to get in on this, we're going to have to sit down here in Missouri and come up with a few things that we find critical and start pushing them in Jefferson City this next session. And if the people that are elected don't want to bring it up, then we can bring it up, we the people.
I've been talking to some of my sources, some of the state reps, and there are people working in talking to some Republicans about getting a bill pushed this next session. They just, we don't want to talk about it until we get some more support behind it. So, that's where it kind of stands now. But I think a lot of people's eyes are opening up, especially what happened in Mississippi. I don't know if you saw a union letter posted by Dr. Bob Onder, where it was from a union official requesting the Democrat union members vote for Chuck Gastenberger and Vicky Schneider for state senate, who are against right to work.
Mm-hmm.
So he posted this and said, we need to get closed primaries because our party's being raided. And also in Alabama, this past primary, the GOP chairman is calling for a closed primary because of the teacher unions are meddling. They don't have many Democrat candidates running, so they're telling the teachers and the unions to vote in the Republican primary. So they're even seeing, an influx in Democrats crossing over.
Sure.
So it just really is causing a problem. And I feel like, the whole thing with primaries actually didn't start in our country until the early 20th century. I did some investigation on this, and it started during the Progressive Era, the late 1800s and early 1900s. And the people felt like, well, the establishment, these party people, they're getting too much power, and we want the people to have the power. So they felt like, they should have primaries where the people are voting. And used to have is caucuses. So they wanted to switch to primaries and have people vote. Well, I've got a graph here in front of me that says the turnout rates for eligible voters from 1789 to 2008, that's as far up as they went, well, up towards the middle of the 1800s, we were up over 80% turnout rate for voters for the presidential runs. And then all of a sudden, in the early 1900s, it takes a nosedive. And then after, it came up and it kind of evened out, so we're about 50% or 40% for midterm. And I'm looking at that as, as soon as the primaries got on the scene, I think the voters just walked out. And they thought it would increase, voter turnout, but I think it had the opposite effect. Plus, when you've got open primaries, and people know this, there's going to be crossover voting, raiding a party. Are you really going to want to run for office when you know your opponents could be voting, in your election? I mean, me personally, I wouldn't run for office unless there was a closed primary.
Janine, let's land on that point for a moment, because some of our listeners may not be as well-versed in the issues, and even some of the hosts on this show may not fully grasp why would voter turnout go down with a primary system. Are you suggesting that it's because people feel like it won't make a difference?
Yeah, I really do. I think it just affected people's outlook, you know, when, especially if you have an open primary, that it the parties are getting so intermixed and intertwined with each other by people crossing over and voting, that they probably don't feel like their vote counts anymore. I mean, you could work in a campaign as hard as you can for a candidate in one party, but then when you hear that there's crossover voting, you feel like, well, what good am I doing?
What Mary Ruth Edwards was saying at the beginning of the show is that even in Washington State, where she's convinced that the people, and this is laughable, that the majority of the people are not in favor in her district of abortion and sexual perversion, yet they keep electing somebody who's in favor of abortion and sexual perversion. How does stuff like that happen?
You know, Washington State's politics, the way it just sounded to me listening to her and their primary system and the way they vote now is absolutely, I was astonished when I was just sitting here listening to that sort of stuff. But I tell you, until we figure out what happened in 2012 here in Missouri and how you can have, like you said earlier, people voted for Mitt Romney, yet Claire McCaskill got in. We had Democrats all across the state won, you know, but yet we have a majority of Republicans in the House and in the Senate. And, you know, I tell you, it's a mixed bag. I don't know if we're going to get elections figured out, but we need to try, and we need to start learning how to get the right people up there on the right spot so that they can get elected and educate this educate folks. That's what we're trying to do with Missourians Against Agenda 21, get out there, let people know what's happening to their property rights and what's going on, and get more informed voters. One of our folks wound up being on the Central Committee up in her area, and primarily because of urban development and some things that she fought for up there. So this is a fascinating look, but I'm going to have to bump out. But we've got to figure this out, guys, or we're going to continue to go downhill when it comes to elections.
Well, Ike, thank you for giving us the benefit of your wisdom. We're going to stay in the same bunker with you because it's not friendly out there, and we need each other. So thank you for joining us tonight. We'll let you graciously bow out. Maybe you can come back again sometime.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Now, Janine and Tony, help me understand the rest of the pieces of the puzzle. What I'd like to throw out, because I know both of you are deep thinkers and highly intellectual, can you explain to me if there's any way we can just skip having parties, or how do political parties, if they're not serving us well, why not get rid of them?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think for me to answer that question, I have to say something like I teach the college people, that I teach a little class on how to develop your voting style. But before we get beyond how to change that or to turn it into something else, if we will get beyond parties, we have to first learn how to use the parties that we have, because it's going to take us a long time to do that. You know, it's rooted into our society now. It's rooted into our financial environment in the political realm, if you will. So we have to start step by step to getting something like Ike was leaning toward is community activism, to get the right people in the right place. All over Missouri, we have so many Democrats running as Republicans and Republicans running as Democrats, because that's the composition of that community. So I think we need to parallel those efforts so that we can slowly start to win that victory. When you do that, then we'll be able to change. Then we'll be able to go into non-party, because you're getting the right people in the right places. And if you have all this mix-match, you've seen it up there, Cynthia. You know, you just gave an example of, you know, somebody supporting Democratic views when they're Republicans. And there's really no excuse. So we have to stop allowing those excuses and do it publicly. But to get to the point where we're at no parties, you know, I'm up, I run the polls at my area here. I'm a poll, election poll judge, and a lot of people last week had came to me and said, hey, I don't want to be in any of these parties. I want to vote for individuals. And I think the more and more that we've battled, because a lot of people are now recently, I mean, I think time to move is now, because recently have come to the conclusion that both parties are much the same, yeah, regardless of their points of views, mm-hmm. or the way they vote, but they're much the same in the way they act. So I think we need to really take advantage of the situation, the current situation, and put the word out there that individual voting is the way to go. So you have to change that voting structure. And you can do that through Get Out to Vote campaigns in your community.
Can you tell me any happy stories, Tony? Because as much as I would love to be inspired by you, and I am inspired by you and your philosophy, and I share that with you, but tell me an example of where it works, not in theory, but give me some live, concrete illustrations of when you've actually seen a good person win. And I bring this to you because Mary Ruth Edwards, who's a very fine, upstanding woman, gave her heart and soul to running, lost. She gave her heart and soul to running again, and she lost. She gave her heart and soul to running a third time, and she's going to lose. And the reason is because we're not doing something that is actually connecting. If you lose, does it matter if you lost by 3% or 40% or 20%? We're getting fractions and fragments, and I'm happy to connect with those who want to connect with me. But there's got to be a point where we have to ask the serious question, why are we always losing?
Yeah, and you know, you can't do the work unless you get elected. And the righteous people don't want to follow down the lines of what it takes to win. So how do you win then? How do you win righteously? And, you know, Chuck Perkinson had said something to me that seems a little perverted now, but he said, if the people want you, then they'll elect you. And we were talking about fundraising, and he was upset with me because I spent my retirement pay, 100% of it, to run my campaign, and I wasn't taking anybody's money because I realized that I'm not going to run the way Roy Blunt's going to run, so why would I waste somebody's money by asking them to give it to me? Believe in me because I'm going to go out and do it myself. And so that attitude is in the party, and we have to pull those, you know, perversions out of the conservative movement and understand that if conservatives are going to win, it's going to happen in the GOP. So you have to turn that party. I don't think we're going to get rid of the parties. But, you know, I don't have an example of the earnest person winning. The only thing I can tell you, Cynthia, is I stopped counting at 5,000 doors. When we knocked on the 5,000th door, we stopped. I got 1,200 people on my rally day. 1,200 people across the state went out the entire day for me. And they did 4,800 doors. So there's just about, you know, 10,000 doors that we knocked on. And the people appreciated it. And they believed in what we were saying. And we brought them a message that changed their life. I could give you a story right there in Eureka, as a matter of fact. I went to a family in Eureka. There was four women living in the house. The mother was 55 years old. She had never had a job. She had two kids. And all of her kids had two kids. And then it gets down to, I shorten the story up. They're all on welfare. They've never had a job. They had 6-7 cars out in the driveway, $300,000-$400,000 house, and they were collecting their welfare out of St. Louis and living in Eureka. So, in short, the 18-year-old, I was her hero. She had seen me at some Tea Party speech, and she said I was exactly what she believed in, and I was the reason why she was going to get a job, and she was going to change her life. Do you know that none of them women ever had a husband and all of their children came from a different father? And she said to me, I think our family values are upside down in this house, and you've proven it to me. And she went and got a job. You know where she got a job at? Same place you worked as a kid, the same place I worked as a kid, McDonald's. So, you know, it's not a matter of standards in monetary value or standards in, I call it cosmopolitan, you know. Look at me, look at me. It's standards in what makes our heart help other people. It, you know, she had said something to me that I say all the time. She said the most important thing I said to her was, what my personal thing is that I teach my children is you give everything that you have. And when you don't have anything to give, you work harder until you do. That's what makes a happy life. So I think my answer to you then, the happiness is, when you have courageous conservatives, legitimate conservatives working out there in the field, you're making a difference in those individual lives. And, I mean, that's one story out of 50 or 60 that I could tell you about people that felt they were going to run the way the government was leading them, and after you talked to them, they validated their thoughts through some similar conservatives, they changed their lives. And that's how we do it, one person at a time.
Janine, yep. Do you have any thoughts you want to share with us about how we're going to make a difference?
Well, I agree with what Tony said, and I'd like to find out more about how he accomplishes getting that many volunteers to volunteer, because I know there's a lot of us out there that have tried to get people to help, you know, knock on doors or do what they can in campaigns, and we just hear crickets. And that's a big problem, because we can't get our message out there unless people will step up and help. And either we're, you know, I think maybe a lot of us are reaching out to the wrong age group, people my age, middle to pre-retirement. Are pretty settled, and we can't afford time. We've got family responsibilities. I think we should be reaching out to the younger college age group that has the time. You know, they want to be interns for future political positions, and they're just, you know, biting at the bit to get out there and help somebody. So I think if we reach out to the college groups, the conservative, I mean, there's some Republican groups in colleges, and reach out to them to have them help volunteer, we might, you know, get a little bit farther than where we are right now.
Yeah, and that's what I do to those college kids and the senior citizens, because they're the demographics that have the time to volunteer what they're promising.
Yeah.
You know, many of the people are middle-aged people, you know, us 20, 30-year workers. Don't have that time because we're trying to put our kids through college, but they do. But here's where people fall short, and then I'll give it back to you, sorry. They don't have a system in place, a self-help system for those volunteers. You have to have a continuity book, a continuity package, and you have to have a leader that follows up on all of the actions. You can get one leader in an area or, you know, a demographic, and a continuity book that allows them to do work independently, they'll be successful. But if you have to continually go back and continue, and you're the one doing all the work, it'll fail.
That's right. You have to have captains. There's a general, and then you have to have captains under you.
Well, let me talk to you for a minute about what it's like to run against a Republican incumbent. And perhaps I'm the only one on the panel who can speak with direct experience, but there is so much disdain and bad attitudes, sneers and jeers. If you dare to run in a primary, you get treated pretty badly, like you just are the one who blew the code of silence. And I have very little patience for that attitude, because as many times as we see our government shift to the left, incrementally, as sure as you wake up in the morning, you can be sure that every year all levels of government are shifting to the left. It happens all the time. The only way to pull it back to the right is for a good person who's on the right to win, to be a conscience, and to make people think, look at what you just did. You claim to be in favor of limited government, and you just raised my taxes. In Missouri here, we have a supermajority in both the House and Senate, and they put a tax increase on the ballot.
Yeah.
How does stuff like that happen? Well, I'll tell you how that happens. When I ran for Senate 4 years ago, the Republicans denied me access to their database of who the Republicans are, but they gave it to the incumbent. And when you have a party that puts its thumb on the scale and says, we're going to let all of our incumbents be protected with money and power, and they can use bills they file to actually fundraise, which is why we had Right to Work on the ballot, if anybody didn't figure that out yet. It was a fundraising opportunity for both sides, the Republicans and the Democrats. Then they get a storehouse of money, power, friends, network, and if anybody dares to challenge them, which I did, then we get treated like the bad guy. And I sound like I'm telling you my sad story, but I only use my story as a direct example of why it's so hard to win. And you'll have a lot of people say, well, then beat them in the primary. Well, guess what? When you're denied access to the database that they give to the incumbent, and when you're frozen out of the funding stream, how are you going to beat the incumbent? Furthermore, those terms they're winning are only a 2-year term or a 4-year term. So how can we say, why are you challenging the incumbent? Wait a minute. Where did people get this idea that it's a lifetime guarantee you get to keep the office as long as you want it? No. My opponent served his term, and his term was now over. It was now a chance for the voters to pick if they could find somebody who would resonate better with their philosophy. So give me your thoughts on how we're going to win in the primary level if the rules are you have to wait until somebody dies or retires.
Yeah, that latter step, you know, they've earned that position. And I think Paul Kurtman was one that says, you don't earn a position. You have to earn the people's votes. You know, that's that entitlement philosophy. I've worked hard to be here, and I deserve to be here. Nobody deserves a position in office unless the people elect them.
I think one of our weaknesses is that when people actually do step out, they in their campaign, in the way they petition, you know, for people, they're not really saying what it is that they can do better. So a lot of people can't see that. And our society likes aristocrats, and they're usually the person that doesn't look aristocratic. So there's a belief structure there that not only did you step out of the norm and you're bumping, you know, you're not waiting your turn or you didn't earn your way up, but I could do the job you're going to do. But when you put these aristocrats out there, and, you know, I'll give you a quick example. My initial speeches were very clear and concise on exactly what policies I would do different, down to the way I would have voted differently than the incumbent. Yet everybody, cricket, looks at you like you're crazy. You talk over their head. But when I started saying, you know, God bless America and we got to get together, well, everybody partied and got on board. So, you know, how you're reaching the people, it's a sales factor, and we just have to know that you got to be marketed. You can't step out there day one unless you're marketed. So if we find those people, you know, in the olden days, you drawed your cart, you rode up 15, 20 people from, you know, 100 miles around, and you knocked on somebody's door. Hey, Mr. Smith, we think you need to be our representative, and here's what we're going to do for you. And you tilled his crops, and you fed his horses, and you gave him money to make the trip. See, those are the things that we need to do in our community. We know the good people in our community. We know those people that are going to have the happy story, the people that work on 5 different nonprofits and, you know, own 4 businesses and give full benefits to their families and friends and whatever. But we're not going out and getting them. See, so if we want to buck the system, we have to find the candidate that we can market. If you're not going to play part of the game, you're not going to get elected, and that's our problem because we're over-righteous, and just because you're righteous doesn't mean you're correct. So you can't get the work done if you can't get inside. You know, Vicki Hartzler has a book out, and she has different biblical principles on campaigning. You know, if you get her book, they're reasonable, about $6, and it shows different quotes in the Bible of how, you know, God's telling us to show what we offer that the other candidates aren't offering and why it's okay for us to offer it. And I think if we attack it with those types of principles, then inherently people will listen and will do that. But we haven't done that in the past.
I agree with you, Tony. Actually, my situation, having been a frequent candidate, in fact, this is the first time in 20 years my name has not been on the ballot. So I can speak to that. My husband used to like it. And when I would go door to door during the dinner hour, because statistically that makes more sense to knock on people's door when they're coming home from work and when they're likely to be recongregating. So I did. I knew that was the right time to go. What it meant to my family is that my husband and children didn't have me standing at the stove cooking for them because I was out knocking on doors. It would have been so nice if somebody had brought over a casserole so I could go out and get votes.
Yep.
Thank you for laughing, but being pragmatic, that's how it works. And yet, instead, we're too competitive. I remember asking a friend of mine, would you be willing to help me run for office? And she wrote me back a 4-page letter saying, no, I really need to be home making nutritious meals for my husband. And I know what part of the problem with people on the right is we tend to be so traditional and realize that, you know, family is important. But if my husband's okay with it and he says go do it, then it is okay. She needed to check with my husband, not make a judgment against me.
Mm-hmm.
So, Janine,
yeah,
give us some wrap-up wisdom. I want to hear from you. Where are we headed? Give us the future.
I think the only way we is make any headway in any future elections is to close the primary. That's my primary goal right now, is to close the primaries. And I'll give you an example here. Rand Paul, everybody knows who he is, said he's for open primaries because he wants more people voting, not less. But here are some numbers that show that open primaries do not necessarily mean more voters. Statistics show that voter participation in the United States was higher when people could only vote in the primary for their own party. In Hawaii, a primary voter turnout fell from 74.6% in 1978 to 42.2% in 2006 after changing to open primaries. The closed primary has more of an incentive for people to join one of the major parties, and it leads people to being more involved in the voting process. And with the open primary, more voters become independent and are less likely to participate in the nominating or election processes. And that's what's happening right now, is there's a big faction out there where people are disgusted with both parties. They're both acting the same. And I feel like it's because of this crossover voting and in the open primaries. And so people are becoming independent. And then they'll just pick any party ballot that they want. And it's just become a mishmash, and people are becoming disenfranchised. They don't feel like they're being represented. We've got a Republican majority. Right now we're wondering, why aren't they voting the way we want? And they're voting for a tax increase that's the biggest we've ever had in Missouri. This isn't Republican values. And we're thinking, what's going on? Well, I think that our first course of action should be to close the primaries and to clean house. And I know that we're going to have a big uphill battle, only because there's Republicans that actually don't want a closed primary, and that's only because they're rhinos. They're really not Republicans at heart, and they want that Democrat vote to back them up. All they care about is the number of votes to get them over the finish line. They don't care who voted for them. They just want to get over that finish line to get to the general.
Janine, do you know how the Democrats feel about the idea of closing primaries? Do you think you can get enough support from that side?
Here in Missouri, they just might be switching over, because I'm sure, like myself, they've probably heard what happened to Dooley, that there's been a big Republican rush to cross over, to vote him out. So maybe the Democrats might be, their eyes might be opening up to this. and they might be willing to close for that. But it's not necessary for both parties in one state to be both closed. I mean, there's quite a few states where one party's closed and another one's open. But I was told by somebody the other day that said, well, if we're going to push for closed primaries, we really need to have it for both parties because it would, he said it would actually make it easier for the poll judges instead of having to hear, are you going to vote for Democrat? Are you going to vote for Republican? Or, you know, just it would just make it easier if they were both closed. So I don't know. It may take a big turnover this next session, but if we keep pushing that, you know, what's been happening in the recent primary election last week, it may happen this year or may, you know, may take a couple more years. I don't know.
Tony, do you have any aspirations to run for office? We may have lost Tony.
Oh, dear.
The question is, Janine, it just seems like we're trying to figure out enough, and yet we're still losing ground every year. You say that there are people who get in office and they vote wrong, and they're never people who vote wrong the other way. I don't see Democrats who are accidentally siding with the limited government principle. So here's what I'm observing. You've got half the Republicans like bigger government. All of the Democrats like bigger government. Now you have a majority of the bigger government party, whatever you want to call it. People in favor of bigger government still make the majority. I don't see how the math can work for people in favor of limited government to win with it working like that.
Yeah, that's true. Well, that's where we educating the public, that's where our founders said that, you know, when we have problems getting the right people into office, that's because the people aren't educated. And once they become educated, or, you know, at least they've got to care. And that's the big problem is getting people the incentive to say, this is really important and we need to do something. And
well, the problem I see with the Republican Party is they seem to have anesthetized the people into thinking, don't worry, we've got it covered. And I was very surprised to learn that 30% of all NRA members are not registered to vote. I thought, well, you know, surely if you're a member of the NRA, you should care. You should care deeply, and you should be very engaged in the process. How does that happen that somebody doesn't want to vote? And the answer is they figure they took care of government and, you know, their dues are supposed to take care of that business for them so they don't have to involve themselves. Nevertheless, I believe the people who listen to Missouri Grassroots Radio are people who do care and do want to make a difference. So I'd like to thank all of you for putting the vehicle in place. We have to have the vehicle ready to go when the pavement comes down, or we're going to be in worse trouble. Surely we didn't wait till streets were invented with asphalt before we invented cars. We had to have the cars ready first. And I get fatigued when I hear people say the problem is we don't have enough good candidates, because the truth is we do have great candidates, we just don't elect them. So after a while, I don't blame people for saying there's no point in running if I'm never going to win. But I'd like to thank you for your part. Janine, are you there still?
Yeah, I'm still here, but I think my phone is going out on me. I'm going to have to call you back on my cell phone.
You know what? We are happy enough that we got to talk to you. And Tony, are you still with us? Tony may have had to go too. I think the best part about talking to you is we're giving people a reason for hope. If it weren't for you, Janine, and Tony, and Mary Ruth, and Ike, we would be in trouble. But there are good people out there, and if I want to leave the listeners with one lesson, it's that stay with us, because there are better things happening. Even when the Nazis took over Germany, there was a point when they were old history, and Germany did come back to reality. So thank you, Janine. You were an awesome guest. It's been a true pleasure and a delight to get to visit with you tonight. Will you be on our show again sometime?
Oh, I'd be honored to. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you.
I'm still here too, Cynthia. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, Tony, thank you for being a blessing as well. I'd like to just give you one last chance if there's something you'd like to wrap up with.
You know, the shortest thing I can tell you is no matter how much effort you put into something, whether it's extremely little, it's got equal value. And the more people that just put out a little bit, that participate a little bit more, educate yourself, the easier it is to educate others. It's just a matter of coming together and understanding that community is important. We have to stop segregating ourselves from everybody around us and come together. So I'll tell you, I could tell my kids, you know, if you have something to give, then give it all. And when you no longer have anything to give, work harder until you do. You'll be a lot happier.
And that's a good word to end on. Thank you for being a blessing. Thanks to both of you. I want you to know that I love everybody who loves liberty. Let's stay together, and we'll talk about it some more next time. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. God bless.
This has been another edition of Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis and hope you enjoyed our program. Please join us next week when we offer another infusion of truth, honesty, and solutions that will grow people bigger and shrink government smaller. Thank you for joining us. See you next week. Yeah.